Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kaveh Kavusi, and I'll be discussing a diverse array of subjects that span from my experiences in the emergency room to the furthest reaches of the universe. I'll be hosting guests, inviting illuminating conversations that at times may challenge ways of thinking or being, while also nurturing curiosity, meaning, and awe into life. Please consider subscribing, liking, saving, or sharing this podcast with any of your friends or family if it feels right for you. Thank you for taking the time. Let's dive into the podcast. This is story time. I feel like a lot of the lessons that we get most in life come through stories. And when they come through life experiences in particular, there's, even in deep pain, great wisdom that can be excavated from it. And I feel like there's important layers that I decorticate at time at work that I wish many people would see to be invited back to the sacredness of life. There are things that I see in the ER that are beautiful moments of the human expression that are difficult in real time, challenging, and surprisingly, you just look in wonder and awe at the human expression in relation to what someone's perception is, what their upbringing has been like, what they're willing to experience, what they're willing to tolerate, what pains they have come to know, and what pains they seek to avoid. And then there's the elements of communication and listening and understanding, witnessing, and then applying knowledge to the best of our capacity, if for whatever is warranted. What I say to patients often is, doctors aren't smart, they just learn how to extrapolate information from data that's provided to them. And I find that often to be true, but there's a capacity to apply what's known into medicine, and then there's the art of medicine, and that intertwines. So I was at work, and on my way there, a friend of mine sends a picture of one of my close friends who passed away that I've mentioned many times in my podcast, and that is familiar to many of the people currently listening to this. His name was Carl. And she sent me two beautiful pictures, one of me or standing in front of him and he's looking down at me. And there's another one where I'm hugging him and I see his frail body that once was, that I'm holding tight. And I remember him whispering in my ear, like, "I really hope I see you again, brother." He was a father of two and had a wife as well and passed away at age 34. Now, on that day, I was wearing a gray t-shirt, and I don't wear that shirt often. Like, it was pitch black in the room when I was waking up in the morning to go to my shift. So I just reached in and grabbed the first t-shirt that was there, and it happened to be my gray t-shirt. And then I get this picture a few hours later from his partner. And I'm recognizing that the t-shirt's on me now. She sent me this picture and it really is pronounced to me. So I decide to wear that shirt for the day. And the shift is going along as it would. There's things that need to be addressed in the ER and then others that don't, that are there. There's holding space for patients, addressing their needs, maybe diverting into some of the things that they didn't realize that they needed to have addressed that happened there. I see particular socio-dynamic expressions between the patient and other family members or lovers when they're in pain, when it has something to do with their health. And there was a patient that came in who was really not doing well. He wasn't breathing well, and he had one of the worst lung infections that I've seen in my entire career, with someone who's not completely unconscious, though he was septic. He needed critical care. He came in breathing very fast, very shallow, speaking in one or two word sentences, very anxious. But when we put oxygen on him, where his oxygen was very low, it came up to almost normal levels, and he calmed down a little bit. And he was very open and willing to and there was no concern about whether he was open or not to the treatment. As far as I was concerned, this patient was very ill, and he was scared but trusting as well too. And so after we resuscitated him and got him stable, debating if we need to intubate him or not, he tolerated the more aggressive breathing interventions that we do in the hospital, and got X-rays and then sent him for CT scan, and the CT scan confirmed what I saw in the X-ray, which was a very bad infection in both of his lungs. And there was the concern because he needs higher needs, so he needs to go to an intensive care unit. And so the intensive care unit was contacted, and they accepted the patient for transfer. Now, I don't know what happened with this few minute process, but it went from him being completely on board, getting the medical support. We put antibiotics on board, give him steroids, and all the other things that are required for medicine, and we switched him over to a more efficient form of delivering oxygen to him without intubation. And he, in 3 minutes, got very aggressive, abusive verbally, and started saying that he wants to leave and he doesn't care. I was writing my note for him at the time to prepare for him to be transferred by ambulance, and the patient then states that he's going to rip everything out. He understands that we're doing what we need to do, but he doesn't care. He wants to leave. He's not going to have anything on his face. And I'm telling him that the oxygen is something that's important for him to, of course, breathe. He's like, just give me the antibiotic and I'm going to leave. And I said, the antibiotic treats one of the problems that you have. The other problem is the stress on the organs that are infected right now that are making your body not sustainable for potentially life. You may die. And he says, I understand that. I don't care. I'm going to go. And he had a family member there who mentioned that he has children. I clarify with him that he's Copus Mentis, that he's alert and oriented. He is of sound mind, not on any substances, that his level of mentation is completely clear. So he's making a decision in his level of awareness, in his perception, that is in the with all of the reality brought in front of him. And I was looking at him and I was listening to him, and without him getting aggressive, because there was a bowl of some of the secretions that had been coming up from his lungs that were here, and I thought that he could maybe knock it towards me. And when you're in these type of situations, you have to be mindful of taking care of the patient, but also your own safety and the safety of everyone there as well too. Because if a patient refuses treatment or whatever it is and they start acting out, whether it's in a clear mind or not, the risk and safety of people is priority as well too. And it may be at the expense of the health, safety, and even life of the patient. And so I listened to the patient and I heard him out. And I started having this very sinking feeling in my body that nothing I'm going to say is going to get through to him. But I want him to know he's supported, and I wanted to hear out every perception that he had. And he was very clear that he did not want to be intubated, that he understood that he would die. And after multiple discussions, we got him to sign an against medical advice form, informed the intensive care unit, and that he wouldn't be coming, and he understood the risks and benefits that we discussed at length, and we removed everything. I gave a prescription to him, and I was feeling this weight within me of, I know we can do something for him, and he's choosing not to. And I left the room, and I came back after thinking, how do I approach this in a way that, yes, a patient can choose this, and he's clear mind, I'm medically absolved. But also, there was one element of speaking up for him There was one element of acknowledging his boundaries, and there was another one also that I was feeling of the maintenance of the sacredness of life. And in addition to maybe exploring a little further, is he aware of the pain that he's trying to not experience doesn't end if he potentially were to pass? It spreads, it spills everywhere onto his other family members, onto his children. In particular, the children were in my mind. And so I realized that if I were to say something to him, I'd be speaking on behalf of 5 or 6 people at least, because there was multiple children and there's other family members and there's probably lovers as well too, or partners. I didn't know the circumstances socially there other than I knew there was children. And so I thought to myself, do I go and ask him to close his eyes for a moment and to reflect on, if he's not willing to make the decision for himself right now, think at least about his children? And I thought that would be unethical, so I won't do that. And that could also add more pain, when right now he's already expressing pain. He's making a decision with the most amount of information available to him and still saying no to the treatment that we're providing to him. He expressed discomfort with the interventions that we were doing. He said no to any further interventions, even if it meant putting him to sleep. He didn't want to be in the hospital. The smells, so the senses were really nauseous for him. And but he expressed clarity in his decision. And I had to honor that boundary. I had Carl in my mind. I had this patient who is saying, the pain that I'm experiencing right now is worth me honoring at the expense of the pain that it could spill onto others, and not choosing life and instead choosing honoring the pain. Whereas my friend was the contrast opposite of that, who didn't have a choice to continue to live and was experiencing the processing of the pain that he knew would be bestowed inadvertently, unintentionally, outside of his control onto his children and to his wife. I haven't communicated any of this with her or them, but this was what was alive for me. And I felt that if I communicate this type of awareness to this person, but I felt that that would be an infringement on the boundaries that he's expressing. But a part of me was knocking deeply within. And because I didn't go down that route, I wasn't more bold. I don't know if the outcome would have been any different, but I felt, a part of me felt like I let someone down, and that I was allowing someone to walk into potential death. And that's part of what occurs sometimes in this line of work. I went home after talking to some of the nurses who had tears in their eyes, saying, how can someone choose to be okay with potentially dying? And I heard them out as well too, and we supported one another, but it was very fresh in my mind. And I have a tendency towards holding the space for many people as well too, as they express their challenges. I started driving home and I kept everything silent, as I often do after shifts, because I feel like that's a time to finally process some of the things that I witnessed, and things that have may have come alive in me or needed to come alive that didn't have the opportunity to, because I was mindful or present to the need of the patient. And it started knocking on me, saying, like, did I witness him enough? Did I acknowledge him? And I kept driving. I got home, and as I do, I have found, especially during COVID, that one of the most effective ways for me to almost wash off the layers and create a boundary between the work that I had and the life that I'm living now is the hot tub. And so I went into the hot tub and I looked up at the stars. And I sunk into it, and I wasn't feeling at peace there. I reflected on it a little more, 5, 10, 15 minutes I'm in there, and I feel a knock that says I need support. And I called one of my really good friends, Mr. Mullins, who I'm sure may be listening to this, but he then spoke with me, and he was incredible at first listening to me share, and then providing his feedback after asking if I was open to the first things that came up for him, which I really appreciated. And he reminded me of a few things, that this man was hurting, and there must have been very deep pain there for him to choose that route. He reminded me also that he felt, based on my expression of what I recounted to him, that I was of service to him. And I started being a little less hard on myself, and it took me a little while because I first felt like, what's the biggest pain that I have here? It wasn't feeling helpless or hopeless. It was sadness. And it was pain, if anything, that this person has such a pain that he walks in his life that there's unawareness here of where that pain is now going to spill elsewhere. In addition to the most poignant one, which is, does he acknowledge the sacredness of life here? And I think we live in a society that often doesn't uphold that. It doesn't encourage the reflection on it. It doesn't seem to value it. And he was an expression of that in that moment for me. And I wondered, should I have, could I have witnessed him a little better? Could I have listened a little more attentively? And when he expressed all of his angst and his challenges and his frustrations, I could have just looked at him, been with him, and said, I heard Alex Hormozi saying this on a podcast with Aubrey Marcus, I believe. And he just said, someone expressed something and he's like, you're right. You're right. If I could go back, given him an affirmation or validating statement that I see you and I acknowledge you, and saying just right there, as he expressed it all, witnessing him and saying, you're right. But I didn't, in that moment at least. I may have said it in other ways. I acknowledged his other things, but I didn't say that. But I did acknowledge also, in reflecting with Ryan, and also speaking with my fiance, which I'm really grateful for, that I had support systems and that I didn't quiet or distract myself or inhibit any of the things that were alive in me. And they were uncomfortable feelings. Really, I didn't want to be with them, but they needed to be held and supported. And I acknowledged that I was there for him in service as a physician. I was in there with him as a human, and I was valuing and acknowledging the pains that I believe I could perceive and see that he was not privy to in that moment or prioritizing. There was one discomfort that the pain pendulum had him swing that way. And I felt that I was there for him in the name of the sacredness of life. Whether that is the case or not, I felt like, to the best of my ability, I was there, as I am with every patient. But I prioritize that more when I feel like the stakes are high. If the person were not to see that or be with that, that they may lose the opportunity to connect with that sacredness. After I debriefed with Mr. Mullins, who offered a practice of, through his partner, who shared, bringing awareness to the discomfort where I'm at, noticing it first in my body, bringing some colors to it and noticing what those colors are as it starts to spin, externalizing it temporarily and seeing it somewhere. And in my case, I'm in the hot tub now, hearing this. It sounds funny, but I'm doing it. And I bring some movement to this feeling, and I put it outside, and I put it up in the clouds that were just above me. And it changed from a blue-purple to an ominous dark black, almost pitch black. And then I brought it back, and it felt lighter and more tender and more connected with me. And I felt a softness start to enter my body. I got out of the hot tub and I went and sat down, and I was calm and quiet for a few minutes, and I got more support from my partner, and I didn't want to silence any more of the discomfort, but I felt like much of my energy had been depleted, and it took sleeping this morning for me to complete the process. And I don't think it's fully complete, but a lot of it's there. And I'm really grateful that I had support there to process it, that I have individuals of such integrity and capacity for depth to support me as the layers that are alive within me were alive in that moment. I'm grateful to be of service in this line of work, where it's a role that is a steward for the caregiver archetype that people need and potentially yearn for and didn't receive at some point. And so we can be in roles that are confronting, but also incredibly liberating at times as we're in the role and of service for patients. And it had me make contact with the sacredness of life again, with my friend who passed, with the life within me, with the life of the patients that walk through those doors, maybe most of them leaving, but some not leaving alive. And that's the reality of some of these experiences and patient encounters. I invite you for a moment to reflect on the sacredness of your life in this moment. If there are pains that you find yourself swinging away from, finding resources, people to speak to, that you can reconnect with that. My friend is an example that no breath is guaranteed and that life can be taken at any point. This patient was an example that illness can strike us at any point, and even if you're young and healthy, surprisingly, you can be really severely affected and potentially life-threatened. But you still have a choice, as he did, as I did. And I'm grateful that those layers were alive for me to be to the best of my ability and service for him and for all. Thank you for listening in, and I wish you well on your path in life, and I look forward to connecting with you, ideally not in the hospital. Signing off from these layers and on to the next.